Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, February 28th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamut. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here. Thanks for having us. Happy Thursday.
Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Happy to be here,
Goodness. All right. It sounds like y'all are raring to go. So we're going to go ahead and get into it. And our first topic today is another round of what appears to be Project Titan layoffs. And for people who don't remember, this is the automobile project. We've heard a few different variations on what Project Titan actually is, so we can't say for sure. But apparently something's happening with it, whether it's that it's not going well or they're scaling it back for some other sort of reason. This is the second round of this we've heard about, right, Brian?
Well, there was a significant restructuring of the program when Bob Mansfield took over,
right?
Two or three years ago,
and came back out of retirement for that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I could be mistaken. Okay.
You were not mistaken. He was Tim Cook asked him to come back and basically sort it out.
Yes.
Like, is this something we can do? Mm-hmm. And the result of that particular layoff, round of layoffs, restructuring even, what was in this project is, or was, that Apple went from designing its own car to focusing on proof of concept for self-driving autonomous vehicles.
Okay.
So what we and we
as
know
opposed,
that,
as opposed to non-self-driving autonomous vehicles.
Yes. Self-driving. Yes. Thank you. I will accept your pedanticness and applaud it.
So Brian is contractually obligated to accept and appreciate that sort of takedown.
Like, at one point, Project Titan had more than 1,000.
Senior contract, Brian.
Shush. Had more than 1,000 employees. And we don't know how many employees there are now, but it's definitely a lot less. So the new report is based on a document filed by Apple with the state of California.
Okay.
And that document, I say it was an employment-related document, and basically they specified in that document that Apple was laying off 38 engineering program managers, 33 hardware engineers, 31 product design engineers, and 22 software engineers, and that the layoffs will take place in April, starting April 16th. Now, this is the same layoffs that CNBC first reported earlier in February.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's not a second round from a rumored round about a month ago. This is actually essentially just details on the same round. And Apple confirmed that with the San Francisco Chronicle.
Okay. So and we're not, so that does make a difference, because at least at first it sounded to me like we had just heard about a round and now we're getting another round, but it's not. It's the same round. We're just getting
a new
angle on the information behind it.
Yeah, we're just getting details on it. So some other little details in the San Francisco Chronicle's. Well, first of all, I got to ding them because they talk about like Apple having a significant shortfall in iPhone revenues, and that basically, I don't think they said panicking. What did they say? They were quoting someone from Lynx Equity Strategies who said, quote, a sudden and significant shortfall in iPhone revenue is causing a level of distress within Apple that is forcing it to make hard choices. That's idiotic analysis.
That's nonsense. That is nonsense.
Can we just go with analysis. No? Yeah.
Right. So, but some interesting tidbits from this article include the fact that Apple did in basically from between November 31st, 2017 and December 1st, 2018, Apple performed 79,745 miles of testing in California.
Interesting.
Now, sounds like a lot, but according to the Chronicle, that's far less than both Waymo and Cruise, who I don't even know who Cruise is, to be honest. Never heard of them. And then during that period, Apple reported an error or a human driver taking control every 1.1 miles.
1.1 million?
Nope. 1.1 miles. And by comparison, Waymo had a disengagement. I'm quoting the Chronicle. Mm-hmm. By comparison, Waymo had a disengagement every 11,017 miles and Cruise one every 5,204 miles.
Oh, my.
Okay.
So this round, like, this is not all of the people that were working at this. And I think that John's going to be able to shed some excellent light on these numbers for us. Mm-hmm. But 38 product engineering product managers were not running the other 86 hardware product design engineers and software engineers. Right.
Right.
So like there are still people working on this project, but that's a pretty significant decrease in the number of people doing stuff. If Apple is that far behind the curve, of course, that data, by the way, please note that that data was from a year ago.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So, John, talk to us a little bit about, like, organizationally, what...
Yeah, there's
a little more of what that looks like.
Several factors here. But before I start, I want to address what Brian said about 38 engineering program managers. And we're jumping to the rash conclusion that there were only 40 program managers amongst 1,000 employees and that they laid off 38 of them. I question that given my experience with job description and the way nomenclature is used and inflation of program managers. It could be you got program managers reporting to program managers within an organ within a project. So I don't take that to mean that the program as a whole has been decimated just because there's a lot of
names. Are you using decimated managers correctly or are you using decimated incorrectly? Seriously, I mean, like decimated means
not in your contract to ask that question.
It was decimated means that it was cut by a tenth. Everybody uses tenth. It to mean that it was like
a factor of 10.
That it was like, you know, everybody was just wiped out.
Yeah. Laying waste is one thing. And that's not what we're seeing here is what you're saying. Right, John?
And another factor is that my experience comes from aerospace, where you have a big project and you have lots and lots of teams. And sometimes there are core teams that are assigned with basic functionality, and then there's research and development teams that are doing far out stuff or support stuff or pie in the sky kind of things that can contribute. And then it turns out that the team leader comes to you and says, oh, it didn't pan out. We can't fit in. We can't finish it on time. We're underfunded, or it just isn't going to work. We can't make it work, and we think that's not the right direction to go in. And so you'll dissolve these satellite teams that were hopefully going to contribute something but maybe didn't in the long run. And so you say, well, it's time to just cut that dead meat out of the project. But that doesn't mean that it affects the core values. No one, I don't think anybody, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, thinks that Apple's getting out of this autonomous car business. So to say that it's having difficulty is probably wrong. It's probably wrong. And
there's 80. So there's 86 of the lower level engineers that were listed and 38 program managers. So what's that? 100 and say 86 and 38. Was it 114? Am I doing this right?
Mm-hmm.
Or 124? 124. That's 124 employees. My understanding is that this project is much bigger than that.
Oh yeah, akin to the thousands. I've heard the number ranging from 1,000 to 2,000.
Well, mm-hmm. it was over 1,000. When I first heard about it, it was at 1,000, and Apple was still on a hiring spree. And then Bob Mansfield came in and brought it down. It brought it way down, but he didn't bring it down to 124 people. This is not the entire workforce by any stretch of the imagination. The question, though, is, was it because the angles, the sub projects that these people were working on have been deemed to be like to have run their course? Or is this
can't deliver in time?
Yeah. Or is it like, you know, we have to scale back our goals here?
Well, the vision for a project changes over time, depending on the nature of the R&D development. I've been in R&D programs, and sometimes you think you can do something that you turned out not can't do in time, or isn't going to work out at all, or the vision of the project changes because of technical maturity in other areas.
And there could have been competing angles, right? Competing approaches that, that, you know, one or two or three of those.
That's a good point, Brian. It's typically done where you have two teams working along similar lines. So if one team fails, the other team can have a chance of stepping in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this could be that too.
Yeah. So long and the short of it, this doesn't say good things about Project Titan's future, but it doesn't necessarily say bad things.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, look at any time we've seen rumblings of new stuff out of Apple before, right? Because like the knee jerk is always, why would Apple do that? Clearly they will fail. And, you know, what's the most recent new product from Apple? The watch. And yeah, what an utter failure that's been.
Well, I
think people who write about these layoffs haven't worked in an R&D project themselves and seen how things go. And so they rashly assume that there's something terribly wrong if anybody gets laid off at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't recognize the organizational structure and the R&D aspect of a big program.
Right. Mind you, this could indicate that Project Titan is in trouble internally. It could indicate that. I just don't think these numbers are big enough to necessarily indicate that. And
I agree.
I personally doubt that they indicate that.
Me too.
Okay. I think we're pretty much in agreement.
Yep.
We're going to talk about robotics on ACM, right?
Yep.
And that involves self-driving autonomous vehicles.
As opposed to non-self-driving autonomous
vehicles. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, excellent. I can't wait to hear the episode. It's going to be fun. You guys are doing that later today. So keep an ear out for Apple Context Machine, and you can hear Brian and John talk more about this there in a way, because robotics. And,
yeah, self-driving autonomous vehicles. I'm at this point, I'm saying this just to
violate your contract terms.
Because you know that it just makes John twitch a little bit.
Yeah, just like, exactly.
Yes. All right. Well, John, we'll give you a moment to recover, because what we're going to do now is talk about our sponsors. So our first sponsor today is ExpressVPN. And ExpressVPN is a VPN service. It was the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar. And one of the great things about it is that the apps are very easy to install and they're very easy to use. So one click on, you're totally protected. One click off, and you're back to normal traffic. And one of the great things about using a VPN is that it can keep your data from being the data that we talk about on this show a lot, about other people having it, your data, when they shouldn't. Whether it's because, there's trackers from social media sites that pop up in your regular browsing, or if it's something like your internet provider or your cellular provider is taking data and selling it to other people about their customers. And either way, like, if you want to make sure that you're keeping your data to yourself, one easy way to do that is with a VPN. So you install an app, it's very easy to use, and all your data is encrypted, your public IP address is hidden, and all of this costs less than $7 a month. And because you are a fabulous Daily Observations listener, then you can get 3 months free on a one-year package at expressvpn.com/TDO. It's expressvpn.com/TDO. Go there, learn more, and get 3 months free. Our second sponsor today is Ridge Wallet, and the Ridge is a minimalist front pocket wallet that helps you reevaluate your everyday carry. It was launched by a father-son team in 2013 on Kickstarter, and the Ridge is now in the front pockets of over 250,000 people. And this is an RFID blocking wallet, so again, keeping your data safe, like we like to talk about here. It's made of two metal plates, and those metal plates can be titanium, carbon fiber, or aluminum. It's all bound together by a durable band, and the whole thing is slim and lifetime guaranteed. So you can get them in loads of colors, loads of styles, depending on which material you choose. And the Ridge will help you carry less, but always make sure that you have what you need. You get 10% off your wallet today and free worldwide shipping by going to ridgewallet.com/observer. And that's RIDGEWALLET.com/observer, OBSERVER. Now, our other topic today.
I have to. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I missed something.
Okay.
This is probably important enough to note. The total layoffs detailed in this letter are 190 employees. Oh. Including the 124 engineer-related positions that I mentioned. So there are more than that.
Oh, okay.
But that doesn't significantly change the calculus of mine and John's analysis.
No, it does not. But thank you for the clarification.
I needed to correct my earlier.
I thought you were having some issue with the wallet. I was worried about, like, what? Okay.
Oh, no.
Anyway. So, thank you for the clarification. Our second topic today is Apple making computers. Remember, they do make computers. Apple making...
Well, do they? Go ahead. Sorry.
I was waiting to see how much higher it would go. Really? Really? So, yes. Apple does make computers, and word on the street is that at some point, those computers are going to be powered by different chips. Right, John?
Yeah, ARMs. Yeah.
Now, okay, so for people who have not been paying attention, playing along at home, what is an ARM chip, John? Or an ARM processor? When people talk about ARM processors and Macs, what are they really talking
about?
This
is Apple's proprietary design based on the original ARM architecture, which is a RISC chip, simple, fast, and amenable to very small production scale. Like, I think they're working towards 5-nanometer production process. It's the chip that Apple uses in the phones and the iPads, and okay. They're numbered. We call it the A series because it started off as, literally, I remember it was A3.
Okay.
For some reason, but it might have started at A1. I forget.
So when we hear them,
A12 now. We're up to A12 in the iPhones.
The iPad, I know, has the A12 chip in it. The new iPad Pro, the USB-C. Yeah. Is an A12. So whenever you hear Apple talk about the processors in things that run iOS, what they're talking about is an ARM chip, because they all start with an A. That's what the A stands for, right?
This is a non-Intel, non-x86 instruction set.
Okay.
So it's peculiar to those CPUs and to iOS, which runs on that instruction set.
Okay.
Which brings up all sorts of issues, which we'll talk about next.
Well, it's next. So, yeah, let's talk about it. What kind of issues does this bring up?
Because in
broad strokes, what we're talking about is powering a laptop with the thing that powers your phone or your iPad, right?
Right.
Like, it's the same sort of chip. It's the same sort of setup. But
stands, by the way, for advanced RISC machines. It's a RISC-based architecture.
Which is RISC, which stands for something else. So
reduced instruction set computer.
Yep.
Computing.
I had no doubt John would know.
It's an advanced reduced instruction set computer machine.
Okay. Which means battery life sucks a little less. Like, what does this actually mean?
Well, this goes back 25 years. Intel instruction set became the classic instruction set for PCs. Mm-hmm. And as the Intel fabrication process became more sophisticated and more demands were placed on the Windows operating system, there was a motivation to add more instructions and more complicated instructions to do more work with a single instruction. And then along came a research group. I forget who it was. It may have been spearheaded by an individual, but I don't remember the name. But there became this research effort that showed that you could do a lot more work faster if you did more simple instructions than if you did a few complex instructions. And so there was this motivation in the 90s to move to RISC, most notably in the form of the Digital Equipment Corporation, Alpha, mini desktop Unix computer.
But most notably to computer history nerds, but probably for most of our listeners, most notably in the PowerPC line.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then as time went on, it was discovered through further research that pure RISC wasn't the best way to go either. And so Intel has sort of struck and ARM struck a happy medium between the simplicity and speed of a reduced instruction set computer, but vector processing instructions when you need them. And so
advanced reduced, which is funny.
Right. But then that brings up as the next topic, the issue of if Apple were to move its Macintoshes to ARM processors, then it would no longer be native Intel. And then you'd have to make a decision about how you're going to run Windows on Macs. And yeah, how you're if you even want to do that.
Windows runs on ARM now.
A version of Windows runs on ARM.
Yeah.
And only limited Windows applications that are designed.
That's very true. Like the bulk of the Windows ecosystem is not moved to ARM.
Probably less than 1%.
Yeah. You're probably right. That's a very fair point.
So the first thing Apple has to ask themselves is, do we want to provide a mechanism to continue to allow Mac users to run Windows operating system and Windows applications? And if we do, how are we going to do that? Are we going to do it through some sort of Rosetta-like instruction translation process?
Yeah, I don't think ARM.
Or are we just
going to
leave Windows behind? Oh, I think it'd be good. I think it'd be fine. I think the power of the ARM processor is so great. I mean, Apple's already touted that the A12 and the iPhone is as powerful as some desktop PCs. I mean, it's doing what 100
yeah, Apple is doing amazing
to process photos. It's already doing 100 gigaflops to process every photo.
Apple is doing amazing things with its ARM-based processors. Amazing things. And I have, it's funny. This is one of the things I talked about at during Monday's Silicon Valley mug presentation that I did. And what I said then is that if Apple's going to do this, I have no doubt that it's going to work. Right. Mm-hmm. We've seen.
Oh, absolutely.
When we've had questions about moves like this, Apple has always come through. And
there's always that meme. Oh, it's so complicated. I don't understand it. I can't conceive of how Apple engineers can possibly pull this off. They do.
The Windows thing could be an issue, but I, in general, am not overly concerned about it.
Okay.
What I find interesting is how Apple will approach the whole thing in terms of strategy. Will Apple decide that maybe it's time to leave Windows behind? That Windows is strong enough and mature enough now that people can have access to a Windows computer if they need it? Or does Apple need to be in the business of allowing its Mac users to run Windows? Is that a thing really, based on consumer feedback? Is that still crucial?
I think it does, especially for some power users. But Apple has shown an increasing, blithe disdain for power users over the last several years on the Mac side.
Well, they might drop it. They've done things like this in the past where they say, we did that in the past. We bent over for science. We embraced pure science and Unix. And now science and Unix, not so much.
Yeah, we don't care. Yeah. We don't care. And the potential benefit here is, one, Apple being in charge of its own processors. One of the if not the most expensive components in most Macs is the CPU. And the GPU is either going to be a close second or, in some cases, possibly more expensive. But I actually doubt that out of the box. But this gives Apple more control. It allows Apple to be in charge of its own schedule. And what I hope is that it would once again give us new Macs every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Apple, as we know, is not real thrilled with Intel's roadmap and rollout schedule.
Yeah, Intel has paid short shrift to power consumption, energy consumption. And mm-hmm. that Apple is super keen on energy consumption, especially on its mobile devices, its mobile Macs, of course, in its iPhones and iPads too, because what everybody is clamoring for is thinner iPhones. And that's sarcasm, by the way. And but Intel hasn't done a good job on the power consumption side. And I think that Apple basically decided when Apple saw how well it was doing with its iPhone processors and its iPad processors, that Apple said, you know what? We can do this for Macs too. We can do a better job than Intel.
Power consumption is related to the production process, and Intel has had trouble getting down to the 12 nanometer level with their Canon-like CPUs. Whereas Apple long ago got to 12 nanometers and is talking about going to 5 in the A13. So there's something about the production design of the A series processors that makes them more amenable to lower.
ARM in general sizes,
and that reduces the power.
ARM in general uses less power, though. I mean, part of ARM's focus from the beginning was power consumption. So doesn't it have to do with the instruction set too?
Well, if the instructions are less, I'm not sure here. I'm telling you more than I know, but it seems to me like if the instructions are less complicated, it's easier to reduce the fab size. But I don't know that for sure.
Well, and then another thing when it comes to power consumption is that Apple already exerts the kind of control that other companies can't really exert over the components of its products because it's controlling the hardware and the software.
And it's better integration to the operating system.
Right. And so if Apple is designing its own processors, it can do even more along those lines. Like, you know, being able to turn stuff off for, you know, tiny fractions of a second. You know, like this is something that Apple already does with many of its components, and the iPhone in particular. And, you know, Apple could do more of that, designing its own processors. And all in all, I can't wait for this. I posited during the fall that the big delay in the Mac Pro has been the development of Apple's own processors. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that's really the only reason that makes any sense whatsoever, that it's taken Apple 2+ years to design a new Mac Pro. I mean, come on. It's a new computer, man. This stuff is not rocket. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? I mean, like HP.
Oh, but it is.
HP develops new computers all the time. Dell computer develops new computers. Yes. I mean, like to make a new Mac. Okay. Make a new Mac.
Makes me think there's a lot of compatibility testing. They got to write a new version of Xcode. They got to certify their apps.
But that's only if, yeah, that's for sure. But that's only if that's what has been the cause of the delay, right? Or delay is not fair. The cause of the ridiculously long period of time that it's taken for Apple to make a new Mac Pro.
What do you think of the rumor that it might bleed into 2020?
That's possible. Especially if this is why, it's absolutely possible. And I'd rather, as much as I want that new machine out, I would rather it come out when it's ready than before it's ready.
Absolutely.
I just hope the next version of Mac OS runs on my old Mac Pro.
What year is it?
I mean, there'll be a new version of Mac OS this.
Yeah, no. What year is your September. Old Mac Pro?
It's the trash
2013
can.
2013 model. It's the trash can, and
that Mac Pro, right?
Coming to the end of its viability in Mac OS, and if Apple delays the new Mac Pro until 2020, and I have to stay with Mojave instead of being able to upgrade to the latest version of the Mac OS in September, I'm going to be very annoyed.
Well, but if that happens, you could yank all the cables that are sticking out the back of that thing and use it as a very lovely paperweight. Hello, John.
Smoke's coming out of my ears.
I'm just getting you riled up for ACM.
All right. Deep breaths, everybody. Deep breaths. All right.
It's a good thing I'm a robot.
Yeah. We don't have to worry. John will just have to return from subroutine, and it'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
Boink.
So, I want to go ahead and make sure that you guys have something left to talk about on ACM. So I'm going to call it here. Thank you so much, Brian, for joining me today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
It's very glad to have you. And also, John Martellaro, thanks for coming by today.
It was fun. Thanks for having me.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamont, and I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.